Welcome to the OCR GCSE Psychology Revision Podcast. I'm your study guide tutor, and today we're diving into one of the most important topics on your paper, planning and conducting research. Whether you're sitting Component 1 or preparing for the synoptic elements of Component 2, this topic comes up again and again. So get comfortable, grab a pen, and let's make sure you're fully exam ready. By the end of this episode, you'll know exactly how to write a hypothesis, choose the right research method, select an appropriate sampling technique, handle ethical issues in context, and, crucially, how to answer the 13-mark design a study question that many candidates find the most challenging on the paper. Let's start with the scientific method and why it matters. Psychology is a science. That means psychologists follow a systematic process. They form a hypothesis, design a study, collect data, analyze it, and draw conclusions. This cycle is called the scientific method, and your exam will test whether you can apply it, not just describe it. The key word here is apply. Examiners are looking for you to take a scenario they give you and show that you understand how research actually works in practice. Now, let's talk about hypotheses. A hypothesis is a specific, testable prediction. On your exam, you'll be asked to write either a directional hypothesis or a non-directional hypothesis. A directional hypothesis, also called a one-tailed hypothesis, predicts the direction of the result. For example, participants who revise using flashcards will score significantly higher on a memory test than participants who reread their notes. Notice how specific that is. It tells us who, what, and which direction the result will go. A non-directional hypothesis, or two-tailed hypothesis, simply predicts there will be a difference without saying which way. For example, there will be a significant difference in memory test scores between participants who use flashcards and those who reread their notes. Here's the key examiner tip. Your hypothesis must operationalize the variables. That means you must define exactly how you're measuring things. Don't just say, memory will improve. Say, scores on a 20-item word recall test will increase. Examiners award marks specifically for operationalization of the independent variable and the dependent variable. The IV is what you change, the DV is what you measure. Now let's move on to research methods. You need to know five main methods: laboratory experiments, field experiments, natural experiments, correlations, and observations, plus self-report methods like questionnaires and interviews. Laboratory experiments are conducted in a controlled environment. The researcher manipulates the IV and measures the DV while controlling extraneous variables. The big advantage is high internal validity. You can be more confident that changes in the DV were caused by the IV. The weakness? Low ecological validity, because the artificial setting means results may not reflect real-world behavior. Field experiments take the experiment out of the lab and into a natural setting. The IV is still manipulated, but participants are in their everyday environment. This boosts ecological validity, but reduces control, meaning extraneous variables are harder to manage. Natural experiments are different. Here, the IV occurs naturally. The researcher doesn't manipulate it. For example, studying the effect of a new school policy on student stress levels. The advantage is high ecological validity and the ability to study things that would be unethical to manipulate. The weakness is that you can't randomly allocate participants to conditions, which limits cause and effect conclusions. Correlations don't involve manipulation at all. They measure the relationship between two variables, called covariables. A positive correlation means both variables increase together. A negative correlation means as one increases, the other decreases. Crucially, and this is a very common exam trap, a correlation does not prove causation. Just because two things are related doesn't mean one caused the other. Always say this in your evaluations. Observations involve watching and recording behavior. They can be naturalistic, in a real setting without interference, or controlled, where some variables are managed. Observations can be overt, where participants know they're being watched, or covert, where they don't. Covert observations raise ethical issues around consent, which we'll come back to. Self-report methods include questionnaires and interviews. Questionnaires can gather large amounts of data quickly and can be anonymous, which may encourage honesty. Interviews allow for more detailed, in-depth responses. Structured interviews use set questions. Unstructured interviews are more flexible. The weakness of self-report methods is social desirability bias. Participants may not tell the truth if they think there's a right answer. Now, let's talk about experimental design. When you run an experiment with two conditions, you need to decide how to allocate participants. There are three designs, repeated measures. The same participants take part in both conditions. This controls for individual differences, but there's a risk of order effects. Participants may perform differently the second time simply because they've done it before. You can reduce order effects through counterbalancing. Independent groups. Different participants are used in each condition. This avoids order effects, but means individual differences between groups could affect results. Matched pairs. Participants are paired based on a relevant characteristic, and one from each pair goes into each condition. This is a compromise between the other two designs. Examiners want you to state your design and justify it. Don't just say, "I would use repeated measures." Say, "I would use repeated measures to control for individual differences in memory ability, which could otherwise act as an extraneous variable." Next up, sampling. You need to know 5 sampling methods. Random sampling. Every member of the target population has an equal chance of being selected. This is the most representative method, but can be time-consuming. Opportunity sampling. Selecting whoever is available at the time, for example, asking people in a shopping center. It's quick and easy, but likely to be biased and unrepresentative. Volunteer sampling. Participants self-select, usually by responding to an advert. It's ethical because participants are willing, but volunteer bias is a weakness. People who volunteer may be different from the general population. Stratified sampling. The researcher identifies subgroups within the population and samples proportionally from each. This is highly representative, but complex to carry out. Systematic sampling, selecting every nth person from a list. It's straightforward and avoids researcher bias after the initial setup. Here's a crucial distinction that trips up so many candidates. Random sampling is how you select participants from the population. Random allocation is how you assign participants to conditions within your experiment. These are completely different things. Mixing them up will cost you marks. Now let's cover ethics. And this is where many candidates lose easy marks by being too vague. The British Psychological Society, or BPS, sets out ethical guidelines that all psychologists must follow. You need to know 6 key guidelines, and this is vital, apply them to the specific scenario in the question. Informed consent. Participants must be told the nature of the study and agree to take part before it begins. If participants are children, parental consent is required. Deception. Participants should not be misled about the true purpose of the study unless it is absolutely necessary. If deception is used, it must be justified and followed by a full debrief. Right to withdraw. Participants must be told they can leave the study at any time without penalty, even after data has been collected. Confidentiality. Participants' personal data must be kept private and anonymous. Protection from harm. Participants must not experience physical or psychological harm greater than they would in everyday life. Debriefing. After the study, participants must be fully informed about its true purpose, especially if deception was used. The examiner tip here is this. Don't just define these guidelines, apply them. If the scenario involves a study on anxiety, say to protect participants from harm, the researcher should monitor stress levels throughout and stop the study if any participant shows signs of significant distress. That's the kind of contextualized answer that earns full marks. Now let's talk about validity and reliability. Internal validity refers to whether the study actually measures what it claims to measure. In other words, whether changes in the DV were genuinely caused by the IV and not by extraneous variables. Ecological validity refers to whether the findings can be generalized to real-world settings. Reliability means consistency. If you repeated the study, would you get the same results? Examiners want you to distinguish between these concepts clearly. A lab experiment might have high internal validity but low ecological validity. A naturalistic observation might have high ecological validity but low reliability because it's hard to replicate. Let's also quickly cover data types. Quantitative data is numerical. For example, scores on a test, reaction times in milliseconds, or ratings on a scale. It's easy to analyze statistically. Qualitative data is descriptive. For example, written responses to open questions, interview transcripts, or observational notes. It provides rich, detailed information, but is harder to analyze objectively. Right. Now let's move into exam tips and common mistakes. First, the 13-mark design a study question. This is the big one. You need to cover aim and hypothesis, method and design, sampling, procedure, ethics, and data analysis. Use the who, what, where, how framework for your procedure to make sure it's detailed enough to be replicable. Examiners are looking for a procedure that another researcher could follow exactly. Allocate 15 to 20 minutes for this question. Common mistake number 1, confusing random sampling with random allocation. I've said it before and I'll say it again. they are different. Random sampling is about selecting your participants. Random allocation is about assigning them to conditions. Common mistake number two, writing a generic debrief. If the question gives you a scenario, say, a study on fear of spiders, your debrief should mention that specific context. Say, participants would be told that the true aim of the study was to investigate fear responses to images of spiders, and they would be reassured that their responses were normal. That's scenario specific. Generic definitions get minimal credit. Common mistake number three, describing an experiment when the scenario calls for a correlation or observation. Read the command word and the scenario carefully. If the question says, design a study to investigate the relationship between sleep and exam performance, that's a correlation, not an experiment. Common mistake number four, forgetting to operationalize variables. Always define exactly how you're measuring the DV. Stress is not operationalized. Score on the perceived stress scale out of 40 is. Now, let's do a quick fire recall quiz. I'll ask the question, pause, and then give you the answer. Ready? Question one. What is the difference between a directional and a non-directional hypothesis? A directional hypothesis predicts the direction of the result. A non-directional hypothesis predicts a difference without specifying the direction. Question two. Name three experimental designs: repeated measures, independent groups, and matched pairs. Question three. What is the main weakness of opportunity sampling? It is likely to be biased and unrepresentative of the target population. Question four. What does ecological validity mean? The extent to which findings can be generalized to real-world settings. Question five. Name two BPS ethical guidelines. Any two from informed consent, deception, right to withdraw, confidentiality, protection from harm, debriefing. Question six. What is the difference between quantitative and qualitative data? Quantitative data is numerical. Qualitative data is descriptive. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and review that section. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of everything we've covered today. One, a hypothesis must be specific and operationalize the IV and DV. Two, choose your research method based on whether you want to establish cause and effect, use an experiment, or explore a relationship, use a correlation. Three, know all five sampling methods and when to use each one. Four, always distinguish between random sampling and random allocation. Five, apply BPS ethical guidelines to the specific scenario. Never just define them. Six, distinguish between internal validity, ecological validity, and reliability. Seven, for the 13-mark design question, use the who, what, where, how framework and allocate 15 to 20 minutes. You've got this. Research methods is a topic where practice really pays off. The more exam questions you attempt, the more confident you'll feel. Good luck with your revision, and I'll see you in the next episode.